Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Glenn Greenidge coming to you live from Blog Talk Radio. This is the International Black Summit, and we are hosting Man of the Month. And who we have with us tonight is J. Kenneth Young from the International Black Summit, one of the original facilitator body. And just want to let you know, do a couple of announcements, just to let you know that we do have community summits that are available. Our website is www.blacksummit.org. You can get information about our organization, what we're up to, what we're doing, and, upcoming events. Anyway, Kenny, how are you?
Hey, Glenn, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for participating on the show tonight.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good. So I want to kind of go backward. You know, tonight's topic, of course, is men of the summit, and we're going to be looking at different aspects of that. But I want to start back with how we know each other, how we met, and kind of trace some of the things that we can say on live radio, some things we can't.
Yes, Glenn and I have known each other since 1987, 88?
Yeah, probably about 87 or so, 87, 88,
yeah.
Sometime.
87, 88, yeah.
And it was at the 6 day in Naples, if I remember.
No, New York. When in New York?
Was one in New York?
Yeah, when I was working in Boston at the Landmark Education Center, and I was in charge of the assistance that we would bring there twice a year in New York.
Yeah, that's, man, you're going back a little bit.
I'm telling you.
A little bit there, man. And one of the things that I always liked about you, Kenny, was the energy that you brought to the table. You always had a particular energy. And at that time, at the 6 day, there weren't a lot of us there. And so it was always a pleasure to gravitate to some conversations that engaged in the black community. And so that was the thing that I was always very appreciative of you. What do you remember back those days for you?
Well, I tell you what, I used two parts about it. The part about getting the team together was always a pain in the butt to make sure that we had enough people to come up there and to assist for that week or 10 days or whatever it was. But I tell you, I always liked coming up there to see you all, come to the event, come to the site. But always, to me, it was like you and I was like having a homecoming. You know, one of, I guess we were only two black males there, if not only two black people there, so. And we were both young in heart, single. So it was always good to come to that space and get with you.
You know, one of the things that I was always surprised about, because in going to school in New Hampshire, I knew a little bit about Boston, and I knew about some of the racial tension that existed in Boston. And for you to be working out of the Boston Area Center always seems to amaze me. I was always surprised at what you were up against. Tell the folks a little bit about what that must have been like back then.
Well, I tell you, it was amazing. So, like, prior to moving to Boston, I lived in Philadelphia, lived outside of Philadelphia. And, you know, Philadelphia is a very large black population. You don't even think about it. But I remember the day I arrived in Boston, and I looked around, and it was like I couldn't figure out what it was other than suddenly it was like an absence of black people. It was like none. So that was number one. Number two was everything was geared around degrees and education and so forth. And a couple of things I do remember. I remember once being on the subway, And across on the cross of the platform, another guy on the other side, white guy, was cussing and spitting and, you know, just like, and I had no idea what was going on. So I kept watching, and it finally hit me that he was just cussing, not at me, but about me. Not even at me, you know what I mean? I wish if he had cussed at me, I could have gotten him. He was just cussing about me to other people, man. It was just a weird, weird thing. But all that stuff was probably very valuable in doing the work with the International Black Summit, because it wasn't no summit. And a lot of that experience I had in Boston particularly was kind of what spurred the need that I thought those of us of African descent should get together inside this game that we're playing called Transforming the World.
Yeah, you know, that you bring up an interesting point, because one of the things that was all simultaneously occurring in New York, Byron Johns had come up to the Sixth Day, like yourself, from the New York teams, and he said, you know, this, you know, I want to connect, you know, I want to hook up with you, and I want to kind of get something going, and when I got to New York, well, after I left Sixth Day staff and moved back to New York, we actually engaged in a conversation of PADEG and founded PADEG, People of African Descent Empowerment Group. And one of the things that, like yourself, we also felt like there was a need to provide this landmark education training in our community. And so we started PADEG probably that... I want to say that December, and we kind of kicked it off that early part of that year.
December, what, 90 was it, 91?
December 90.
Mm-hmm.
It's 89. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's 90. It was December 90, so earlier.
Yeah.
And so around that time, we were having conversations and we were doing things in the New York Area Center. And then this conversation called the summit occurred. So that kind of grew up out of the conversation with Aloma and Pat Reed. So tell us a little bit about that, because
I just want to go back.
Sure.
Go back a little bit, because there may be some people listening that aren't familiar at all with Landmark and what we're talking about. I know I've invited a couple of people that I'm coaching to listen. But basically, Working for Landmark Education, which is a transformational company, one thing that I got out of it was how powerful I was, or how capable I was. It was just, you know, just got real sense of our power. And one of the things that we would do when we travel, we would keep identifying other people, other black people who are participating in Landmark, and particularly those of us who, quote-unquote, were either on staff or in leadership positions. And, you know, as I was going around the country, man, I was like, I made sure I would always connect to other people that was, like, you know, playing this game. So I think someone's in there was like, man, this is great. How can we – I think it started off initially like, man, this is great. How can we get it more to our community? Or can they hear the possibility of this? Or will they think this is all white or whatever? So those are the kind of issues, because I did this training initially back in 79, 78. And for those 10 years, I've always been like, well, am I doing all that I can do to have the people that I'm concerned about participate? So – you know, that is what was going on with me, and was going on with a lot of other people who have participated in Landmark and had access to this work and, you know, wanted to give it back to the community. So that was that. So when I left Boston, stayed in New York for a year, and then I moved to Chicago. And I was in Chicago. Now, interesting enough, in Chicago, about 10 years before then, I did what was called the Black Action Workshop. Fernando Flores was part of Landmark, and he had this workshop, and I flew to Chicago to do this Black Action Workshop, and I met a group of black people from Chicago, and we stayed related. so that when I came back in 90, I connected with those very same ones, and all of us were still figuring out what kinds of things that we can do, what kind of empowering things that we could do. And we started this organization called Black Network, TBN, something like that.
Okay.
And that's what we were doing, just trying to look at ways to keep promoting this work to our community.
So this work that you did with Fernando actually helped capsulized or gelled your relationship, and you're able to now, you had a pocket of people that you can now relate to in Chicago, where you had ended up pretty much.
Without a doubt, man, because the course was so profound, and we all went through stuff, and we just stayed in touch, you know, we just all stayed in touch, and when I came back, it was like a big homecoming. It was like those 6-7 years just went by so quick, and everybody got geared up, say, hey, let's kind of finish what we started, let's galvanize the community, let's bring transformation to the community, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, let me go back for a second. So the work that Fernando did was within Landmark, or was that like a outside?
No, it was inside of Landmark. It was when Landmark was offering the action workshop.
Okay.
And that was in 86, maybe 85.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting, because one of the things I started the work in 81, and had never heard of that until after the summit. Matter of fact, Conrad had told me a little bit about it. Conrad from New York had participated in that in those series of courses. But I was up in Toronto, so I lived in Rochester, and our closest area center was Toronto. So we went north rather than south down to New York City. So interesting. Okay. So now you've got this community that is has taken on some leadership, is looking to create and cultivate this conversation of transformation in the Black community. But you also had some folks that were in youth at risk, and you had the brother that was in Prison Possibility.
Prison Possibility. Now, the person you're talking about is Eugene Featherstone. Like I had always been like an advocate of this work. And back in the early 80s, we attempted to have a training, a prison training. And at that time, I hooked up with a guy that just recently got out of San Quentin named Robert Froggy. And we started this organization called In Crime, In Crime Inc., In Crime, et cetera, Prison Project. And the whole commitment was to have the then S training into the prisons. So we went as far as we could go with that, and had some stone walls, but that was a whole network of people that I met. And I met Eugene Featherstone initially in the action workshop before he even took on the prison possibility. But it was there when he and I kind of started talking about the possibility of doing prisons, and I told him about the work I did with Robert Froggy and so forth. So, you know, if you look back at it, there's a little strand with youth at risk, a little big strand with the prison possibilities, and all of it was kind of leading to how can I empower my community, and I kind of consider the prison community my community also.
Okay, gotcha. And then this whole conversation with Aloma and Pat came up.
Yeah, this is funny how this came up.
Yeah.
But Brenda Gill was one of the folks that I met back in the action workshop, had gotten a phone call from someone, and she told me that there were some people from Texas that was trying to start something. And she said she didn't quite get it. They had asked her to be on a conference call. She said she didn't get it, so she didn't go on the call. So they called her anyway. And she wasn't there, but her answer machine picked up, and the answer machine stayed on. And so she heard about 20, maybe 30 minutes of the call. So she came back home, she heard the call, called me. She said, hey, man, these people, I think they're really up to something. Let's join forces, or let's get on board or whatever. So the following call, we were all on. It must have been about 12, maybe going up to about 15. And we were having these calls on like a daisy chain. Each person would call someone.
Right.
And after having about,
that's
after
that's
having about,
way,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
When first came out, and they didn't have all these conference lines and all that other stuff that we were doing. Right. Go ahead.
Exactly. Exactly. So we started adding people, and I think we had up to about 20 people. And we said, you know what, this doesn't work anymore. We need to meet. Now, fortunately, I had a pretty good relationship with the center manager in Chicago, and Chicago was in the center of the United States, so we decided we would meet in Chicago in May.
Okay.
And so the 20 of us all got together and had our first meeting in the Chicago Center.
So what? So you had your first meeting, and who was in? At what point did you start talking about Anthony, Robin, Perry?
Well, Anthony Randolph, his name, he was invited to come because he had taken part of the S training, I think it's the S training in Compton.
Okay.
And him, Perry, and all of them. But Anthony was the only person to come to our first meeting from the West Coast. So it was Anthony, and I think Anthony had patched in Perry.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that, but definitely Anthony was there.
Mm-hmm.
And the two people leading it, the conversation, was Pat and Aloma,
okay,
who had just taken a wisdom course, I think it was. But anyway, but the whole theme for them was how to empower black men and black women in relationships, how to have a powerful relationship between black men and black women. That was the initial conversation that we were exploring then. And we had two or three people from Detroit, a couple people from Detroit. Catherine Copper was there, myself, most of the people obviously were from Chicago.
Right.
And we just engaged in that conversation.
And that was and you had more than one of those meetings, right, or no?
Well, it was a 2-day meeting.
Okay.
And the first day was kind of like, why are we even together? Or we had our attention on, we knew what we wanted to do, but what was interesting was we got together as if we're like one group, but during the process, during that whole conversation, we started bickering and started separating. Then we started looking at light skin, dark skin, East Coast, West Coast, South, North, education, not educated. So all the different things that one could use against each other to separate us was coming up in the conversation. So much so that the night of the first night, everybody's pissed off at each other. So, but we saw that what it really was, that all of us had to kind of bring all this stuff that we say about each other to ourselves on the surface, so that we can just get to the fundamental what was underneath of it about how we really appreciate and admire ourselves. So when we got to that on the second day, the conversation was, wow, this was pretty great because we definitely related. And we said, now, if we could just have more people go through that conversation. So that's initially what we were thinking about, having folk go through this same space / conversation we went through from that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Interesting. So it's a lot like what the facilitators do when they get a new conversation or a question or inquiry. They bump up against it. So you guys bumped up against it, kind of worked through it, and now we're able to deliver that.
Yeah,
or at least recreate it, right?
Well, the process is pretty similar to what one of our questions was, like the trigger. Like,
yeah.
We pretty much learned that with what there was to work on is probably the thing that's right in front of you.
True.
Yeah.
And then there was at some point that you decided that you were going to now contact people. And,
yeah.
So who all did you contact?
I contacted you.
Well, I know.
I think I called you between Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. I remember it was on the weekend. I remember you got the call on the weekend. Yes.
Yeah, it was right after we had broken through and got related. You know, this thing started looking pretty good. I think I called you and said, "Man, we got something going here." Blah blah blah, and that. And then, you know, and then from there, what we were doing, I calling every center that we had, that we knew, if everybody that we knew that was black and whatever center they were, we were calling them and letting them know what was going on.
Okay.
And we also decided that we would write a letter. I think we even declared then that we were going to have this event called the Summit.
Yeah, you were pretty clear. You were pretty, when you contacted me, you were pretty clear that you were going to have an event. And you knew, I'm not sure if you had picked out, no, I don't think you
had picked out. Yeah, we had picked out. We knew, we had picked out Atlanta. It definitely was going to be in Atlanta.
Okay. But did you have I don't think you had a weekend yet, but you knew what month it was going to be in, I think, right?
Exactly, yep.
Yeah. And you're working on the arrangements, and you're going to let me know. I remember that. And then, but there was something about the excitement in your voice that's what I used to recreate the conversation in New York. Because there was something about you guys getting together and breaking through and community. But there was an excitement that I had never, and I've seen you excited before, but not about that in that way. You know, there was something got translated in the communication that I was able to receive, and I got excited about it and was able to recreate that. So who else did you contact around the country?
There was Kumba Johnson. She was calling centers and saying, "Anybody black in the center?" And then they would get on the phone, and then she would tell people.
That so sounds like Kumba. I mean, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed.
But every black person that I met from my days in Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, obviously, and New York, you know, I was a commando, so I had done some work in Minneapolis, Detroit. That's where I met Pat and Barbara even before the event, and in Charlotte. So I was blessed to say that when that first meeting, outside of Anthony, most people didn't know each other. I knew everyone at that first meeting except Anthony.
Oh, wow.
Everyone I had met before, I had a relationship with. So to me, it was like all the people that I've been like working with about getting this thing rolling, we finally got together and was having the kind of result that I thought we could have. Like, but Catherine and I go back to 1985, you know, and we always was kind of like having projects that we worked with. So it was just, you know, it was just like working with all my homies inside of Landmark.
Cool. Very good. And one of the other things that I wanted to when you guys decided to make it happen, how were you involved at that point? Because at that point you still weren't part of the initial. How did the initial team get picked? Like Anthony, Robin,
yeah.
Mary.
It was time to pick the leaders. Now I didn't trust. Even though I was happy and excited, I didn't trust everybody, and I didn't want to. So we knew Anthony wanted to be one of the leaders, and I guess everybody looked at who led seminars as that was the first pedigree. Like, well, if you led seminars, you probably could lead this event.
Right.
And Anthony led seminars, and Catherine led seminars, and they had asked me. And initially, you know, I told Catherine, I told Catherine to go up there. She, you know, I'm not going to, you go do that. So the first two, quote unquote, leaders, designated leaders, was Catherine and Anthony. And I was kind of like the wingman. Now,
okay.
And Anthony had said about Robin and Perry. And that one of the two, probably Perry, was on the phone during both meetings, so his presence was there.
Okay.
So So it got formulated that those four would be it, and I just stayed on the wing.
Okay. Okay. Now, in Atlanta, what was your involvement then? Were you part of the clearing with the other four? Or?
In Atlanta, I was part of the four, like part of the four or part of the five. But I spent most of my time in the back of the room. So the four of them would be leading, and then from time to time I would interject something from the back of the room, like that. So, again, that's how I went. Kind of like I was in the back of the room holding this quote-unquote space while Catherine Perry, Anthony, and Robin was up front. And I think it was probably at the end of Sunday or towards the end of the event or just before the end of the event, Anthony said, JK, come on up here, man. You're a senior, you know, like that, you know, like stop hiding out or whatever, or the time is right, whatever.
I'll actually bring that, because I remember that exact moment, and I can actually recreate it. but before I do that, I actually want to read the declaration. So that we'll get what got created. And so the context of it, I didn't get in there till the Saturday. And one of the things, there were already 100-plus people in the room when I showed up on Saturday, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. And I walked into this room, this filled with black folks from all over the country who all had done landmarks, either the S training or before, and I was pumped. I was pumped just walking in. And one of the things that you know, you declared, you said your name and who you were and what city you were from and all that, and I walked in there, and because of the work that I'd done with PDEG, there was what I was present to was when I said my name, there's like whispers, oh, that's the brother from New York. And to hear that was a little eerie for me. It was like I'm known here, but no one knows me. You know, it was very much a stepping into the space conversation, and you know, that's one of the things that the summit, the landmark, has started the conversation. The 6 day has propelled the conversation. The International Black Summit has really allowed me to engage it for myself and to kind of, you know, I don't know if man up is the right conversation, but to really embrace it and to be present to it and to own it. And then that night, we actually went into the conversation of what we are up to and what's our scope and what's, you know, what do we call ourselves, and what are we up to, and what got moved around in the space was the conversation, which were the words and the thoughts and the ideas for the declaration. And so we were kind of battling around with some things, and we worked in the room to kind of get some ideas and some guidelines. And then we had another meeting after the session had completed, and the Luba Day, was it Luba Day and Martin Grant?
And yeah.
There were about, when we left the room, so after the session closed, there were about 25 or 30 people who had the next level of the conversation. And then the third level, maybe an hour or two later, Martin Grant, Luba Day, and maybe about five or six of them went upstairs and kind of crafted it some more, and with the intention of presenting it the next day. And the next day was what I'm going to read to everyone out there now. the International Black Summit Declaration. And we weren't clear what if it was going to be Black Summit or what we were going to call ourselves, but we knew we were declaring ourselves. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. And that was Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we started Sunday, pretty much.
That's right.
You know, and then I think what we had the breakout groups, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had specialty groups, and we broke out into the groups and did some work in the breakout rooms.
Yeah, we broke out of different interests, people that were committed to empowering their community, education, business, whatever the particular theme was that they said that they were interested in. We set up groups for them to get together to create whatever they wanted to create inside of that. Because one of the things for sure is that we didn't want the summit to be something that's going to tell people what to do. We wanted it to be a space where people could discover how to fulfill themselves. So we were encouraging, inviting people to express themselves and use this network or use this group to network to empower yourself.
Yeah, and then this is for me where you demonstrated your facilitatorness. Well, we've got another caller on the line, 856. Is that Clara? Is that you? Okay, you're live, so you can come into the call when you get a chance. So the thing that I got real clear about was this. We were now in the, you know, we had done all this great work. We were related. We hadn't gotten these groups. You know, we kind of, you know, people got to express themselves, express their commitment, what they were up to, and then people started bickering. Then it became, you know, people with attitude and anger and so on and so forth. And I'll never forget, because I remember you walking from the back of the room to the front of the room, and you said, wait a minute, I got something here. And you had the conversation about what it is when people are getting ready to leave jail. And you talked about that the break in relatedness, that people don't know what else to do, or they break so they have an excuse to you know, get angry, pick a fight. You know, but clearly was this break in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, clearly that was what was occurring in the room. And after you spoke, it was like, aha, but of course. but prior to it, it was like what's going on? What's in the space? What's the you know, the nannerings that were kind of going on. And and so for me, you know, that was like, absolutely, JK is one of the, you know, the five. And that's when we embraced the five as being the number that the summit looks to put groups of, and of course it was just, you know, but you really were being five all along, just undeclared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was doing my regular, trying to hide in the background. I've given that up, though.
Good for you. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. And so, how was it? How did it end for you? What was the culmination of that event? What was the debriefing like? Tell us a little bit. Share a little bit about that.
Well, a couple of things. Even when I was watching the bickering over whatever they were bickering about, it didn't get very clear and reminded me of, you know, of working and being in prison and noticing what would happen, how great relationships would begin to deteriorate the moment someone got their date. And, you know, it didn't take long for me to see that what they were doing is trying to ease that separation away. But it was two parts about that. One was getting that insight, getting that realization. And then the second part was like, now, am I going to share that? Because that's my community. The prison community is my community. So, and I almost could not share because I was so excited and hyped and wanted people to get that nothing's wrong, man. We got a good point. So that when I shared it, then I instantly became that community. So now my community got expanded. So back to your question, what was it like? I felt like I lived in every part of the United States that every person was from. That wherever someone was from, I had a connection there. New Orleans, Oakland, you know, wherever. And I just felt more expanded and related. And, you know, I felt fulfilled. It was kind of like everything I ever wanted to do from having worked with Landmark just got fulfilled. If we don't do nothing else, I'm happy. You know, I got everybody together. I got the right people together, you know.
Good. I'm actually going to move the conversation and shift it a little, just a tad bit, because you're talking about relationship. You're talking about now being related. What has the summit opened up for you in the area of relationships with men, relationships with women? What was that like?
Well, I tell you, I've been thinking about this question ever since you told me we were going to have this conversation. And I see, this is from where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that I didn't have good relationship with black women or men. Didn't have a good relationship. And it's interesting because when I'm 63, 64.
Mm-hmm.
When I was born, if I look at my birth certificate, you know, I was born colored. And I was born in the world of being colored. And then somewhere in there, in the early 50s, I became a Negro.
Yeah, right.
But when I was both of those, I still was not someone who was accepted, right? And, you know, and I definitely had some issues about being dark, and I had issues about light-skinned people. You know, and all that stuff. And, so being dark back in the 50s, you know, it's kind of funny. I was listening to the guy speak on Inauguration Day, that black get back, white, you know, I don't know if you heard all that.
Yes, I did, yeah.
If you're brown, you stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow and like that.
That's right.
It brought all that back. If you're black, you get way back. And you, Kenny, you go way, 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 way back. So I had some undistinguished issues about being black that I wasn't even aware of. Only in the summit did they start evolving and me start letting go of them, right? So, you know, I was pretty much a whole loner, you know, in that thing. And, even though I said I was one for the community, I was like alone trying to do the community. And, you know, if you remember back that time, I was dating white women and black women, but, you know, mostly white women. And I never really had no thought about it, like if anything's wrong or whatever. But like I said, only now looking back, I can see that it was my way of turning my back on the community that I felt that had rejected me.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing because the second summit, a lot of those issues, in the summit in Highland Park, a lot of the issues of, actually even interracial dating, because of Perry, you said what you said, Perry said what he said around dating, well, being married to a white woman, and people were in shock. But the thing, you know, and had their experiences of it, and I say that we began the healing process because we all had to get who we were not, all of our prejudices around that which we felt was superior or inferior, and we had to bounce around all of that. The thing that I got clear and that the summit provided me specifically when I look at relationships with women was it actually had me have a degree of a higher degree of respect just understanding of what it is to be a black woman and to want to date one. Because you know, like yourself, I dated women. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't black. You know, it could be Chinese or you know whatever. It didn't matter. But being in that summit conversation and being about, being the declaration and the commitment to our community, I was clear that that's who I need to be with as a woman of African descent, and you know, that's one of the things that changed me.
But and also, Matt, I want to make sure you get that it wasn't an accident that those issues came up in the second summit that was in Highland Park. You know, because that's where we started to practice at the end of each summit. We started a practice of what question or what is it that we're going to look at, engage in for a year and bring whatever that is to the next summit.
Right.
And the question that we left Atlanta was who am I in relationship to being, no, who am I in relationship to the black community? There's a black community and who am I in relationship to that? One. And the second part is what is it to be black?
Mm-hmm.
So those were the context, the question that people were engaging in. And, you know, that we were engaging in and that we had no idea that it was going to bring up all the stuff that it brought up. But it wasn't an accident that, you know, because we were talking about white, you know, talking about gay, white, young, old, I mean, all the things that those of us of color go through and often get criticized about being all came up. But the thing that happened, and it's interesting because it led to, it was like memories in my world is like a healing, whereas we all could be one with it. Not that we've changed any of it, not that any of it will change, just that we expanded our capacity to be with it.
To hold it, that's right.
To hold it, yeah. So we're no longer letting it dictate what we think we should say or do. It now is like we said, just let it be. Oh, okay. Because that was interesting because that led to the next summit in Oakland, which was about the brothers, about the men, and how we relate to each other.
Well, you know, that's the other aspect of it that that also shifted for me as well. Not like I had any problems or any relating to the brothers, but there was something. To go through what we went through together, there was a bonding. Bloodletting. There was something, you know, to have gone through that with you, with Anthony, with Perry, with Oren, with Lubide, you know, and to continue those conversations ongoingly, because PDEG meetings we had once a month. So we were engaging in that conversation and seeing each other and working and doing some things in our in the landmark New York Center. So we were engaging in that conversation and working together and creating some things and making some things happen. And so it there was something that got forged out of that conversation, and the summit for me was the source of that.
Let me tell you another powerful part about participating in the summit, particularly in the first 10 years, first 6 years for sure. It was my relationship with Catherine Copper, Robin Randolph, Anthony Randolph, and Perry Parks. Those of us that were called the senior facilitators or the ones in charge. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you knew, but from 1 year to the next, we spoke almost every Monday at best. I don't think we missed four, but I would say for that first year, we spoke once a week, every Monday on a conference call, furthering what we uncovered from the summit, bumping up against stuff. I mean, I remember one time I got so upset because I was saying, of the five facilitators, how come I'm the dark-skinned one? How come everybody's light-skinned? What's happening here? How did that happen? Am I the token black? But familiar issue, different arena. I'm pretty much wherever I go, I'm always going to think I'm a token. But all through that, I mean, we ended up sharing our lives together, and when we would come to the next summit, and we would have a whole year of having gone through stuff. And we would know, and we would have our stuff be inside the question, like, what is it to be black? That was, that would be one of the things that we engage in.
Sure.
So, that's a camaraderie that really contributed to me, because I had to start trusting women. I learned a lot from how to trust women from Catherine and Robin, and the same with men, with Perry and Anthony. So, the summit was a year-long lifetime process for me, and is for me.
Yeah. When I look back, I have the same or similar conversations with Rosemary, with Susan, with Orange, with Bill Patterson. It almost is like I've grown up with them. Like, they're even tighter than my family members because of the sharing and the expression and the just being able to communicate. I mean, just to having a safe space to communicate. Cool. Yeah. Now we're I'm telling you, I wish I had some more time. One of the things I want to ask you about is what would you say about the summit in terms of how your business life has occurred? Like, how's the summit impacted what you're doing today in business?
And I'm glad you gave me a chance to look at it, because I can really see it now. The long answer to a short question. If you go back to when I first did the forum, you figure I was involved with drugs and life of crime and all that and I thought my life was going a particular way, and then I did this program and found out that I could create a whole new life, and then I was so thrilled about that, a new possibility. I wanted to give it away to my community, and giving it to my community led to the formation of the International Black Summit. And all those places became vehicles for me to express my power. But it wasn't until the latter part that I realized that there was these programs called Landmark Programs, called the International Black Summit, and then there's this entity called me, and that I had power distinct and separate from those communities. Those communities empowered me, but they were not me. So in the earlier days when I was leading and doing the facilitating and making a difference, I wasn't clear about what the source of it was. I thought the source was the context of the conversation, not that I brought myself in the conversation. I now know that I am the power that brought oneself to the conversation. So what I'm doing now,
hold on a second. I just want to tweak this out a little bit. So you got clear that the source of the conversation was you, and that there was a context called Landmark, called International Black Summit, that contributed, but you had to separate yourself from those entities.
Yeah, because up until that point, I did not know that I was separate. I would have said that everything came from that. But like I was, I don't know if I would have said it this way, but I would have been like I was a pawn inside of expressing it rather than, no, I'm not a pawn. I'm this king that's getting empowered by this conversation. Right. So that whatever attachment that I had to it, I didn't have to belong to that group anymore. I didn't lose anything like that.
By not being part of it, right.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, it got to the point that in order to increase my power, I needed to separate.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? Let's talk
some more about that. That's good because it's great.
And it's not that I needed to separate from either one of them, other than the fact that I needed to, you know, it's kind of like I needed to stand on my own. I needed to draw from myself
So you really did some work around sourcing yourself. Sourcing who you are and understanding that landmark, the summit, and any other conversations were all contributing to you sourcing yourself.
Absolutely. It was like all those entities, even going back to any other program that I went through, what they did was allow them to keep stripping away, you know, who I'm not and just being left with who I am. You know, so, you know, what I do now, you know, I work with individuals or I work with companies pretty much, you know, making a difference that they can. My message is yes, you can. And if you get some teamwork alignment and some commitments, you can really take off.
So say a little bit of exactly more about what you do. So you're a coach, like a business coach?
I'm a business broker, and what I do is help people buy and sell businesses and get them through the whole process. To buy a business is about a three-year process. Most people don't relate to buying a business. It's not like buying a house or buying stocks. You're buying a career, and you want to make sure that you're buying something that you love, not something that makes money. So it requires me to have types of conversation with people to make sure that they're doing what they love. But in the process of doing that, I found that the most people that would come to sell their business or most people that would come to buy a business would not be prepared. They would be at least 2 years behind the curve. So I spent most of my time dealing with people who weren't ready. So so I said, well, let me just look. And so I took on creating business plans. So what I do is I help people create a one-page business plan, a strategic business plan to get them in action. So that now I look for people 2 years, 3 years out from buying or selling a business and work with them, you know, till they become successful in doing either one of the two. But now, the thing that I always wanted to do way back, even when I first did Landmark or whatever, was I wanted to be a professional speaker, public speaker, you know. Oh, yeah, yeah. And in 96, 97, just before Les Brown broke out, he was doing some work in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And me, Linda Coran, Kumba, we were like assisting him and working him. And it came up again that, you know, this is what I want to do, but I didn't do it. So anyway, as of June of this past year, you know, I joined the National Speakers Association. And I'm a professional speaker. I now do workshop motivation. I do that, and plus I have my company, the Young Group Inc. I have all the people that could do the things that I used to do that I don't like to do. So now I go out and do the speakings and get the engagements and then turn them over to my team to complete.
Excellent.
And then another thing that we did too is in this buying and selling is that, you know, my wife Karen, she was in the corporate world, and it was just time for her to give that up. So one of the businesses that I brokered was a business that we brought, Huntington Learning Center, and we're in the third year of operation, and we're doing great. She's managing it, and that's how that's going.
Awesome. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so, like, now I look for talented people. You know, I look for good business opportunities to inspire, or talented people to inspire. You know, I'm working with this one client, one lady, young lady. She's really a star. She's getting ready to bloom. She lives in like Columbus, and but she's going later on. She's going to take off because she's just that kind of talent. So there's a little bit of joy in watching her develop. And I got some pretty interesting concepts that I'm working with that I'm having fun with. But most of all, look out for me on the Speaker's Trail. And I'll tell you when my book is complete, From Dreams to Schemes. And
I love that title.
And tape some books. But yeah, I life is good.
Good, 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 good. Well, what I wanted to do is I've got a couple minutes left. I just really want to thank you so much for being on this call, for the relationship that we have, and actually I see a couple of things for us to do in continued relationship. Because, of course, you've sparked a couple of thoughts, a couple of ideas around business that I want to pursue. And I just want to thank you and acknowledge you for the work that you've done for the International Black Summit, for the black community, and for the world.
You're welcome, man. And one thing, in closing, when I went to the website and pulled down all the questions from the past summits,
mm-hmm.
And each one, I wrote a little note as like an indication about where my life was. And I'm pretty excited. The next one is in London. I don't know if I'll make that one, but I'm intending to make the planning meeting in April.
Okay.
And I'm just real proud to have been part of the summit. And, you know, I'm not particularly proud of Susan Shelton. She's like my new champion.
Mm-hmm.
That I work with, and who's one of the leaders in the summit. So, you know, I'm just pleased to be part of it.
Well, thank you for being a knight in shining armor when it comes to the conversation, because you certainly are that. And you can be the dark knight if you like.
Now we can have that other conversation, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. let me do a little housekeeping here.
Okay.
Just want to let you know this is the International Black Summit. Our website is www.blacksummit.org. This is part of the International Black Summit Network, talk show network. We have upcoming events next week. We'll have On Track with Henrietta out of Chicago. This Tuesday, I've got a show called Growing Wealth. That comes on from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, the 27th. It's a bi-weekly show. As I said, next week at 8 o'clock, you'll be hearing from Henrietta On Track. And we've got shows every Sunday, and so I'm just letting you all know the conversation of the International Black Summit is one of empowerment, one of taking care of our community, empowerment, and we're looking to make things happen in London. Our next event is going to be the first weekend in August in London. We haven't set the site yet, but we'll have that information on the website. Again, the website is www.blacksummit.org, and there's lots of information around what we're up to and what we're doing. And let's see. And, you know, just thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We are up to having your community, our community, be successful and have fun, be empowered, and be inspired, and all the things that goes along with that. So that's We've got about 25 seconds now left, and I just want to thank you all for coming to the show. The show is taped. You can get iTunes or podcasts of the previously aired shows. So please.
Glenn, thank you. I want to acknowledge you, Glenn, for doing this. You're doing a great job, man. Thanks.
Yes, you are.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
Yes.
It's been my pleasure.
Mr. Keisha, hello, everybody.
Was that
Belize?
Yes, it was Mr. Keisha from Belize.
All righty. Oh, that's the 000. I got a 000 on here. Cool.
Yeah.
Yes, that's me. I want to say hi to KJ. Thank you, Kenneth Young.
Hey.
You're breaking up a little
bit, but
we can hear you. We stopped streaming, but we can still, but we're good. We're good. Well, thanks for Shakesha being part of it all the way in Belize. Claire, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your support. I did look in the chat room a little later. JK, again, once again, just thank you so much for being who you are, being the brother that inspires me, that that always has some conversation for me that challenges my mind.
Awesome. Great job, Glenn.
Thank you.
All
with
right.
that, I'll you all. Yeah, Chikesha, go ahead.
I thought you needed to click on me. I've been sitting in silence.
We can't.
Right here. Yeah, you're breaking up.
Okay.
We got the okay clear.
Yeah, okay, here we go. Speak directly into the mic. It's here for a reason.
Oh, no, it's still breaking up really bad.
Yeah,
it's
still breaking up.
Yeah,
all right, everybody. Good night. Love you. Peace and love.
All right.
Ciao.
Peace and love.
Are you still there, Claire?
I'm going to email you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.